Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center on CMU's campus in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcast. My name is Suzanne Miller. I'm a principal researcher here at the SEI. Today, I'm very pleased to introduce you to Dr. Carol Woody and Dr. Robert Ellison. Today, we're going to be talking about the Wireless Emergency Alert System and the importance of trust for its use, for its safe use, I might add. But first, a little bit about our guests. Carol has been a senior member of the CERT technical staff since 2001, and currently she's the technical lead of the Survivability Analysis Team, whose research focuses on cybersecurity engineering, building capabilities and defining, acquiring, developing, measuring, managing, and sustaining secure software for highly complex network systems as well as systems of systems. And I have to tell you, she's a very collaborative member of our staff. I've worked on several projects with her on different aspects of this. And as a member of the Survival Systems Engineering team within the SEI CERT program, Robert has served in a number of technical and management roles. He was a project leader for the evaluation of software engineering development environments and associated software development tools. He's also a very special person in that he was also a member of the Carnegie Mellon University team that wrote the actual proposal for the SEI to be convened. And he joined this new FFRDC in 1985 as a founding member. So this is the first time I've ever gotten to interview a founding member of the SEI. Thank you for coming here, Robert and Carol.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, well, let's start off by having you give us some background about the Wireless Emergency Alert System and how it works. And how did the SEI get involved in this research?
You want me to take that one?
Yeah. The
Wireless Emergency Alerting System is a capability that's been added to the general public alerting system that's been in existence, I think, since television was started. And what this allows to happen is that emergency alerts now can come directly to your cell phone.
And we've seen that with some of the polar vortex kinds of things that have happened.
weather alerts
of those
Amber
kinds.
Alerts are another one that, that comes through that process. But what this also allows to happen is if you and your cell phone are in the geographic area where an alert is issued, you'll receive the notification. You don't have to sign up for it in advance.
And it doesn't matter what service you're a part of. Anybody that has that wireless capability will receive that notice.
All the major services are distributing these notices, but it is restricted to the newer telephones.
Okay.
The newer cell phones have the capability to pick up this particular communication capability because it's using a very low bandwidth distribution.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that even if the service was degraded during an emergency, you would still be able to get that information.
Which is important because often in these emergency situations, you do lose the typical kinds of communication services.
When the weather takes out the towers, you still want to be able to get some level of communication.
And on purpose, it's a very short message, too, so it will go.
Which we all appreciate.
Yes. Well, it goes in those conditions.
Yes. Excellent. So how did you get involved in this research?
SEI was asked to work with the Department of Homeland Security because they're supporting all of these alert originators, and there are thousands of them, to help them figure out how to stand with this new capability. The capability itself just went live last April, and all of these alert originators are now adding this to their systems to try and understand what capability they need, how they can integrate it with what they're already using. So in some sense, they're struggling with all of the typical system expansion capabilities that we would think of with any software effort.
An originator can be very small, a 2 or 3 person office. It can be a whole county facility in Texas or a state. So very significant
or
range.
Or national for the weather.
Yeah, or national. So very significant range of capabilities that you have to sort of manage all of them.
So you need to be able to understand the trust issues related to the alert originators. Am I a real alert originator, or am I somebody who wants to try and spoof the world with some alert that is not official is not something that's real. You've got to be able to deal with all the service providers. You've got to be able to deal with all the government agencies that are related to all these. So,
And who you buy your software from.
And that's, so all of these things come into this idea of trust issues.
And trust is two-sided. One side of it is I'm putting an alert into the system as the originator, but the other side of it is I'm receiving an alert. Mm-hmm. Am I going to act on it?
Right.
And so we have to look at it from both sides. And that's not typically done in a software process.
So the originator needs to trust that when I put an alert out, the people that are meant to get it are going to actually get it. And when I get an alert, I need to trust that it's something valid and that's something that I should act upon.
But the alert originator also needs to say, if I put the message in this form, they will read it and they will know mm-hmm. what to do. So it's a case of they have to understand what kind of trust are they expecting
sure.
of the people who receive the message?
Right. So an amber alert, you're going to expect different kinds of action than a mm-hmm. weather alert, for example. And so they need to be specific right. about what's the expected mm-hmm. action. So all of these kind of things go into that communication.
Yeah. And how do I encourage that the receiver trust my message?
So you've got the alert originators, the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, commercial mobile service providers, suppliers of message generation software. I mean, all of these are elements that contribute to that trust. And you've written a technical report that starts to provide recommendations related to all of those different stakeholders. Why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of what's in that report and what's important for people that want to know more about both the wireless emergency alert system and the kind of work you're doing with it?
Well, let me talk a little bit about how we factored in the right information to describe trust, because there are lots of things that could influence trust, but the question is, in this particular case, what does? So we started with public alerting experts, people that have been working in this field for a long time, interviewed them in terms of characteristics of what works and what doesn't mm-hmm. work. Remember, we're building on a legacy system, so there's a lot of data to mine from that side. Then we also did surveys of the typical alerting population so we could get their feedback. These are the cell phone users and the cell message distributors.
Right.
So those people would have an understanding of how they would react. And then we also talked with the vendors as well to get a sense of how they're supporting the system and the kind of qualities that they're attempting to build into their software. So all of these provided a big range of factors, but they're plus factors and negative factors, and how do you figure out which ones are influencing?
Right, because you don't, for example, you don't want to scare the public and create a panic reaction with a certain type of message. So certain events you need to communicate about carefully. And I'm also assuming that someone that is a digital native, you know, who grew up with computers and cell phones and smartphones is going to react differently to some kinds of messages than digital immigrants that maybe some of us are more reflecting that didn't have computers available to us until we were almost adults.
Well, we're also a multilingual environment.
Good
and
point.
And so the factors of what is the content that appears mm-hmm. on the cell phone
right.
Will also be a motivator in terms of whether you trust the information or not.
So how do you describe this? How do you help the alert originators and the message providers understand where they might be contributing to not getting their message across, as well as ways that they can actually get their message across in productive ways?
We built a series of scenarios, and from those scenarios did a lot of surveys of data.
Okay.
And that gave us reactions to different scenarios that we then assembled in a model. It's a Bayesian belief network model that allows us to simulate a whole lot of factors in terms of determining their importance.
Right. And that's a statistical method
exactly.
that is used frequently for sort of setting up the boundaries of reasonableness
yeah.
for different kinds of factor analysis.
We had something like probably 60 or 80 factors, and you have
yeah.
to say, Only a few of these you can deal with, which ones were important or which ones shouldn't you do. So it was a combination of what was really good and no, don't do this. So we had to identify out of that whole collection a few that they could pay attention to.
Well, many of them were conflicting factors, too.
That happens,
So you're not going to be able to maximize everything. So you're playing trade-offs between these. And the question is, what are the trade-offs?
That's really the key to some of why this research is important, is because if people don't understand where there are inherent conflicts between different factors that they may want to maximize, they may go off in a direction that is counterproductive.
I mean, you could rush an alert but then have misspellings and misplaced words. That will affect, I'm not sure I'm going to pay attention to this. I'm not sure it's from a good source.
Right. If you can't even spell the words right, how do I know?
Or if I can't really tell you what to do, that could also affect it. So both sides have to understand what the relationships are.
Okay. So where are you in the progress of this work, and what comes next?
What we've done at this point is assemble a range of recommendations based on the factors, both recommendations for the alert originator as well as recommendations to them about the recipients, so that they can factor these into their choices of systems and how they proceed to set up the capability. I think it would be useful for us to give you kind of a quick rundown of those recommendations, because they start to give you a sense of the kind of factors that are involved. If you look at it from an alert originator's perspective, they're going to be focusing only on the very high urgency severe events, because this is something that's going to be massively distributed and quickly available. So it's got to be something that's sufficiently important for that distribution mechanism. It's also recommended that they seriously look at matching the footprint of the distribution as closely to the alert problem as possible. Okay. That's one of the challenges, the way the system is currently set up. It's based on county boundaries. And on county distributions in the East Coast, that might be fine. But on the West Coast, you're talking about massive geographic distribution that may be way far away from the alert. Mm-hmm. And if people get enough noise, so to speak, of unexpected alerts useless alerts, I think is the better word to say, they're going to start to ignore them, and that's a concern.
But basically what we call alert fatigue, which you have to deal with in lots of situations where you have a lot of data coming in.
Right. We don't want to compete with the email spam by any means. They also have to be very comfortable that it is an authorized alert. They have to be comfortable that the security is working. They have to be comfortable from an alert originator perspective that the system itself is accessible, that they can get it out quickly and efficiently, that the system is going to perform well. All of these are your typical software system results.
But often things that have to be accounted for in a degraded environment kinds of emergencies.
These folks are not necessarily in their office during an emergency, so they have to be able to do this from other locations, from mobile devices. And yet it has to be done securely. And so those are things.
They have some real challenges.
These are things that these alert originators, smaller ones, hadn't really thought of. So these are some new things to consider.
They're also challenged with integrating this capability with their existing structure, which is quite archaic and in many cases relies on telephone service. So they've got some real challenges with integrating wireless.
It was particularly a problem for the smaller organizations who did not have the funding to do major upgrades.
That's right.
So we had to offer advice for, you know, how could they approach that?
How can you do the business case for this and get your constituents to help to fund this? Yes.
And the speed at which they can generate the message is important. They're going to be under time pressure, and they're going to be under a lot of concern to get the information correct. And they're confined to 90 characters. So how do you pack as much information as possible in there as quickly as possible? They also need to ensure that the alert will be issued appropriately, that the accuracy is going to carry through from what they enter to what the person actually receives on the cell phone. So that's reliance on the system itself. And one other thing that generates trust is some sort of feedback mechanism, because they're sending information out but they don't really see the actual recipient process.
So if they have a neighborhood that needs to evacuate in a fire, they need to know that people have received that and are acting on it.
Right.
And that's a piece I haven't really seen in the alerts that I've received is any kind of way to do that kind of feedback. So that's an interesting point.
Well, it's also feedback after the fact. What could we have done better?
Mm-hmm. Improvement
things,
process.
You know,
right.
There, because you're on that message, you'd like to be able to, the person who reads it, they need to be able to understand it,
mm-hmm.
say, I accept it, this is important, and then be able to act.
Act
so it's
right.
It's a combination of those things have to come together for it to be a successful alert.
Exactly. Okay. All right.
Did you want to go over the ones for the recipient? Because I think those are equally as important.
Yeah, for the recipient, we were again looking at this model that said if you're looking at an alert, you want to be able to answer the phone. That is, if they see who it's from, they immediately ignore it. It's not going to be a success. They again have to understand that message. They have to accept that it was from an authorized source and then have enough information to act. So as we looked through there, the things we actually came up with was a combination of things to do and not to do. Certainly to do, it was clarity of the message, mm-hmm. spelling. The things that we ignore messages that are from our bank that are misspelled is certainly part of the problem. Has to be, why do you want to do this? Why is it important? Clearly defined, what are they supposed to do? And the issue that came up in terms of languages, it was important that the alert be in the primary language of the recipient.
Right.
There are things not to do. As we said earlier, too many alerts that are not applicable, they'll be ignored. If there's confusing or insufficient information, that's going to be mm-hmm. a significant problem. If you have an alert that simply comes in 10 minutes late or worse, yes, you will lose confidence in that alert very quickly.
Evacuate now. Yes, I can see that. My house is burning down.
Yes,
it's
already
late.
Blew up.
Yeah.
Certainly, a security compromise is, with bogus alerts is going to be a significant problem. And one that's harder to control is that these areas will have a city, they may have a county, multiple who could issue alerts.
I was thinking about that.
If they all start doing it and there's no coordination, it could be very confusing.
Yep.
It's like,
And there are situations like fire is a situation I know a little bit about, and there are many, many stakeholders that have different parts of the information landscape in a fire situation, and so making sure that that you don't overload people with conflicting information from different
sources.
Since these
are only 90-character messages, you also typically want to say more information, give them a pointer, some other place they can go, because you can't include everything. It's just enough to get their attention.
What I think you're sensing, too, here in these recommendations is that not all of them are things that can be implemented easily. Some of them are going to require governance changes with this coordination effort. Some of them are going to require improved technology and follow-up with the feedback, because
mm-hmm.
they've never looked at feedback for the public emergency alerts.
Right,
the televisions
right,
don't mind feedback on that. But all of these, as we're personalizing things more and more, we have to build a way to know that the message is getting through to the right people. And so all of these become additional requirements that get layered on in terms of the capability that aren't usually thought of originally when people are saying, ooh, that would be a great idea.
Right. Well, and people that have in their minds the precedence of the emergency alert system, you know, the noise that comes on the radio and, you know, that is, as your frame of reference, they don't think about that level of personalization and the possibility. So when you're building the systems, you may not even include the possibility in your architecture that you can actually accommodate some of those things.
I think for these organizations with this, there's a high risk that you don't do it right.
Yeah.
In terms of damage or loss of life. So that is increased stress that they probably haven't, they're getting immediate actions for something that normally, it's be a half hour later, things that, now you're looking at things 5 minutes from now.
Well, and what that also tends to generate is some risk aversion. If I'm at risk financially, or if somebody is going to complain to the government, sue the provider, whatever, then, actually getting people to put this out there is an issue in and of itself.
For organization, it turns out even that decision, who makes the decision within an agency or a local alert organization, who says that can go?
Yeah.
In one case, it had to go to a county executive. So we had to be able to reach them in order to get approval to send it out.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of, there's both social factors here and technical factors. It's not just one or the other in this. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing now? What comes next?
Well, at this point, we are supporting the group in terms of thinking about the security more in depth. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is one of the major issues to make sure that
And that's one of the expertise areas of your group and CERT in general.
So that we can help them understand what are the kind of risks that they may be facing. And how can they then evaluate their particular situation and systems and vendor choices and integration choices to make sure that they are maximizing security appropriately?
Okay. Well, as someone who hates getting things on my cell phone that I'm not sure if I trust, I applaud that focus on security. And I'm sure many other people appreciate the fact that your team is working on this. Well, I want to thank both of you very much for joining us today. Robert, I've known you for a long time, and I love to see the different things that you get involved in. And Carol, you've just been a breath of fresh air ever since you got here at the SEI in terms of collaboration across boundaries. So I'm thrilled you guys are doing this. Thank you so much for joining us today. If our listeners would like to download their technical report on this topic or any recent SEI technical reports, go to resources.sei.cmu.edu/library. In the bottom left-hand corner, under SEI links, click on the Author A to Z Index and find either Carol Woody or Robert Ellison. For visual diagrams of key concepts associated with the recommendations that Carol and Robert have put together, please see the transcript that goes along with this audio podcast. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you.